Good morning. It is time to get up with Thanksgiving football. The late game is for first place. Who will emerge as the beast of the least? Meanwhile, the really late game has been pushed to Sunday, and there are now real questions as to why. Could it mean a forfeit? We've got the very latest. And then the coach hits his own quarterback with the hezzy. Is it the beginning of the end in Philadelphia? Answers to those and other questions as we get up with you, starting right now. Greeny here in the Seaport wishing you and yours a very safe and healthy and happy Thanksgiving. Delighted you've chosen to start it by getting up with us, and you're not alone. Take a look at this collection of football conversation we are ready for today. Neek and D. Wood, Bart Scott, and Shefty ready to go as we bring you Thanksgiving football this morning to get your day started. And it starts with this. It starts with a game that will not be played today. The Ravens and Steelers, as you know by now, has been moved to Sunday afternoon. That decision coming after the COVID-19 outbreak among the Ravens worsened, and the league wants more time to conduct testing and contact tracing. Baltimore adding three more players to their reserve COVID list yesterday. The Ravens now have seven players who've either tested positive or have been identified as close contacts. And then this is maybe the most important part. The team has disciplined a staff member in connection with the outbreak. So let me bring Adam Schefter into the conversation here. It always begins with Shefty with the latest. Shefty, what can you tell us about what's going on in Baltimore, particularly with this staffer?
Well, they are obviously looking into this and to see how this virus spread, as the league is always going to do with contact tracing. And they've identified the individual they think it started with. And now they'll see how and why this happened, why it led to basically the postponement of a game that was supposed to be in prime time tonight that now has been shifted to Sunday afternoon, 1:15, causing an awful lot of changes and an awful lot of Pittsburgh Steelers to be quite upset about this whole arrangement. So there's all sorts of fallout, and this is what the league has preached all year long, that the actions of one individual can impact everybody on an entire team, and in this particular case, two teams and a whole country that was waiting to watch that football game tonight. So we'll see what kind of discipline it leads to. We'll see what is the fallout from this particular situation, but obviously it's a situation that nobody wanted. You hope first and foremost that everybody's okay, that the virus doesn't spread, but now also you want answers and you want to make sure that something like this does not happen anywhere else anytime soon.
Right. The one thing we know for sure is they will not play tonight. We do not know with certainty that they'll be able to play Sunday, right? Can you pick up the thought from there? Where does it go from here?
Well, listen, the league planned to play this game on Thursday night, and you'll notice it said all week long, the status of this game remains unchanged. And that will be the case, Greeny, going forward with every game. The status will remain unchanged until it's changed. And so there'll be more testing that's done today and tomorrow and Saturday. But just like the positive tests within the Ravens organization grew from 1 to 3 to 5 to 7, we don't know that it's going to stop there. If it does, yes, they will play on Sunday. The status will be unchanged. But if there are more and more and more positives, and it makes it such that they can't play this game, well, you have your answer right there. So, again, the plan is to play Sunday 1:15. We're planning for that right now, and we'll see how the testing goes in the next 24, 48, 72 hours.
I think it's also important to remind everyone, or to let you know if you don't know, the Ravens are then supposed to play again next Thursday. Baltimore-Dallas is next Thursday's game. So there are a lot of moving parts here, and Shefty will keep us abreast of all of them. But you mentioned the Steelers are upset. Well, they were making no secret of that yesterday. Let me show you some of the reaction from Pittsburgh on social media. We see the first one. That's Chase Claypool. This came out just moments after the announcement of the postponement. He simply tweeted, what a joke. Juju Smith-Schuster had lengthier thoughts. First, the NFL takes away our bye week because another team can't get their COVID situation together. Now they take away our Thanksgiving primetime game for the same reason. Eric Ebron also posting thoughts yesterday saying, I'm not going to lie, NFL, this is, and we can't show you the word that he says it is. So let me bring the rest of the crew in. And if you don't remember, the reason they're complaining about the bye week, their game against Tennessee much earlier this season had to wind up getting moved, and it cost the Steelers their bye week. So that's some context of why they're saying what they're saying. But Bart Scott, as you listen to these comments from the Pittsburgh Steelers, what thought goes through your mind?
They come off sounding like children, because you have to understand, we're in the middle of a 100-year pandemic. They have to understand and read the temperature of the room. This virus is spreading all over the country. And they should feel blessed that they haven't been, you know, exposed to it. But also understand, is this the unfair competitive advantage that you want when you talk about playing this great rivalry, which is the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers? This is one of the best rivalries in all of football, and this game has huge implications as far as the Ravens being able to have opportunity to go to the playoffs. So you want them to play without seven of their players? Is that what makes you feel better? I think maybe what they did is they looked at the film and saw the fact that they got beat up last game. It was the fact that Lamar Jackson turned the ball over in the red area, and not that they dominated the Ravens the first time around.
Dominique, what do you think?
I mean, I get where Bart's coming from, but I also understand being upset if I'm a Steelers player. Like, they feel like they have a Super Bowl caliber team, and they feel like they are, and they are in the lead in the AFC, and every game matters, and this stuff matters to have your season disrupted twice. And I understand, you got to read the temperature. It's a global pandemic. I understand all that. But by all reports, they are following the protocols. They are not having these major outbreaks. They have their season impacted, potentially championship season impacted, on two separate occasions because of what seems to be some irresponsible behavior by their rivals, not even someone in their own locker room. Like, that would upset me. I can't be upset at the NFL necessarily, because it seems like they're doing the right thing to try to protect these players and not expose them to this. But I understand being upset with the teams who can't get their COVID situation in order, and that impacting your team, impacting your potential undefeated season, impacting your potential first round bye in the playoffs. That would really upset me.
It could wind up impacting that. We can get as far down the rabbit hole on this as we want to, but this is one of the things that could trigger the mechanism by which eight teams make the playoffs in either conference this year, which would mean no one gets a bye in the first round. D. Wood, what's your overriding thought as you listen to some of this?
Well, listen, I understand where Bart is coming from. It's the fact that we're in a 100-year pandemic. This is a season unlike anything that the NFL has ever experienced. But at the same time, you know, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, you've been doing things the right way. You've been following the protocols, doing everything that the league has laid out for you. And then here you have your chief rival within a division, the Baltimore Ravens, and one of their staff members goes out here and not doing what he's supposed to be doing, and now the whole team gets infected, and the game gets pushed back. That affects your preparation. Remember, Green, when you're playing on a Thursday, it's not like you're going out there practicing in pads and all those type of things. It's more of like a walkthrough situation. So now the game gets pushed back to Sunday. Now you got to change your calendar. Players are creatures of habit, so I can understand why players are upset in this particular situation.
Yeah, I think this is a case where everyone can be right. It's easy to understand why the Steelers would be upset by all of this, but I actually think Bart makes a good point that perhaps this isn't the time to be pointing out just how inconvenient your life is being made by the circumstances of this pandemic. Hold that thought for just a minute, fellas, because there is an entirely different sort of story from the NFL yesterday. We know the Cowboys in Washington will play their game today. The Cowboys will be playing with heavy hearts after the sudden loss of their strength and conditioning coach, Marcus Paul, who died yesterday, surrounded by loved ones after suffering a medical emergency at the Cowboys facility early Tuesday morning. He was a defensive back with the Bears and Buccaneers for many years. He was 54 years old. The owner of the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, released a statement which reads in part, "Marcus Paul was a loved and valued member of our family. His passion for his work and his enthusiasm for life earned him great respect and admiration from all our players and the entire organization. Our hearts are broken for his family and all the individuals whose lives he touched and made better." I wanted to bring Damian Woody in for a moment here, because, D. Wood, I know that you knew Marcus Paul. I'd love you to share a thought, if you would, on this morning about him.
Yeah, Green, this is definitely this is a tough one, not only for me, but for everyone that knew Marcus Paul. And Marcus was with me in New England. He, you know, when I was a young player, you know, this was a man who, you know, showed me the road, you know, taught me the right way to work. Particularly, you know, just exercise and taking care of my body. And Greeny, you'll never come across a kind of more humble man than you would with Marcus Paul. And you know, just the lessons that he gave me, you know, during the weight room and you know, because he played briefly in the National Football League, and to be able to pass that on to me, to a young man that was just starting out his career in the National Football League. I'm forever indebted to Marcus Paul, and my thoughts and prayers goes out to his family and to everyone that knew Marcus Paul.
The outpouring of emotion from across the world of football has been really notable and extraordinary for the last few days. And so the Cowboys, again, they will play their game today. They will play it with heavy hearts. And Dee Wood, thank you for taking a moment there to remember your friend. And again, we will mention the game is being played today. And so let's take a look at the game, which does have extraordinary implications in this division, where all the teams have struggled, but someone will win and make the playoffs. With a win, both teams would give themselves a 25% chance or better to win this division. A loss for either would really impact their chances of making the playoffs. Again, the winner of this game will be in first place in the division heading into the weekend. And so as we look at this as a football game, Dominique, watching the Cowboys play this past week against Minnesota, I thought to myself, that's a team we haven't seen all year long. They just looked different. Why? What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, they got some stops on defense. That was the big difference. I think that even back when Dak was healthy, the major issue was them being able to put together some consistent defensive plays. And they weren't outstanding. They were just pretty good on defense, which is all you need when you have the playmakers that they have on offense. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to repeat that going into this game. But if they can, then I think they become one of the favorites in that division of mediocre to below average teams. So being able to run the ball helps, especially when you're to take pressure off your defense, and Andy Dalton coming back and finding ways to complete passes to those outstanding playmakers, and then those playmakers making improbable plays. I think that is something that you can't always rely on, but you should be able to get that from week to week, every now and then from the Cowboys. So they look a lot better than they've looked in previous games, but I don't trust it, Greeny.
Well, I mean, look, again, to get to 4-7 in first place in the division, you only have to trust them so much. Bart, and we were talking earlier this morning, a lot of this is about the quarterback for you.
Yeah, I mean, when Andy Dalton's at his best, he's a competent quarterback. He's a guy that's above a game manager. But I think, you know, Mike McCarthy finally either got them to buy in by going all Gallagher, and I wonder if he had the face shield on when he was smashing watermelons. But that trick only works once. The problem is, you know, the Washington football team comes in this week, and they're bringing in the best pass rush in the past five games. You know, Dallas is trying to figure out their offensive line. And if Andy Dalton has to throw the ball more than 30 times, he's going to leave himself vulnerable. As they're trying to shuffle out and figure who's going to be the right tackle, the left tackle. I think right now the time is right for Alex Smith. What a story that would be, Alex Smith coming back and marching his team back to the postseason. He's the best quarterback left in his division, Greeny.
Yeah, they've been an interesting story to follow. Zeke Elliott finally ran for 100 yards last week. They're 25-4 since he got there in games in which he does. Shefty, how about this? What are we hearing coming out of Dallas this week and the way they looked, the tragedy there notwithstanding, and just the football side of it for them?
Well, I think it's all about the emotion of today and how this team basically responds to the events of this week. When you lose somebody that you love so much and care about so much and are asked to play a football game just days later, that is challenging emotionally to do. Now, this has happened to this franchise before. You remember there was a player a decade ago or so that was killed right before a Thanksgiving game. The team responded, came out and played very well. And I think this team will have a lot on its mind, as you mentioned, the heavy hearts that it'll be playing with. And I think there's no way that can't impact the way they play today.
And it's well said, and it will be interesting to see, again, so much more important than anything that happens on the football field today, but it is a very meaningful game in the division. Meanwhile, let's run the hurry up, Shefty, and go through some of the other news around the sport, and let's start with the Texans and their injuries as they get set to play today.
Listen, they've already ruled out two wide receivers for today's game. Randall Cobb, Kenny Stills, not going to play today. They've been ruled out, and so it'll be up to Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks and Kiki QT, some of the other players, to try to step up in the absence of the injured wide receivers. They are not the only team dealing with injuries today. Of course, the team they'll be playing, the Detroit Lions, has their own injuries right now. Kenny Golladay ruled out today. Danny Amendola ruled out today. And the big question involves their running back, DeAndre Swift. But Golladay, with the hip injury, has not played in a little bit of time, had a setback, didn't practice. DeAndre Swift is listed as questionable due to concussion. My understanding is it's unlikely that he's going to play today. We'll get an official ruling here in the next couple hours. We'll see whether he can make it back before the game, but I have a sense that he's going to be down at this point in time. And as for the Chicago Bears, also in the Detroit Lions division, they have yet to name a starting quarterback. Nick Foles did not practice yesterday due to that hip injury. Mitchell Trubisky did practice, and so we'll see how they shake it out this week and what they decide to do. But if Trubisky's practicing on Wednesday and Foles is not, Maybe that's the first hint and sign as to what's to come in Chicago as the Bears get ready for a big game against the Green Bay Packers on Sunday, Greeny.
Yeah, we will talk a little more about that one later. We actually will play you what Matt Nagy said. And candidly, listening to him, you became far less certain, as opposed to being more certain, as to who his quarterback would be this weekend. Meanwhile, very big news from college football yesterday. The legendary coach at Alabama, Nick Saban, testing positive for the coronavirus. He is experiencing very mild symptoms and has begun the quarantine process. He will not be available to coach in the Iron Bowl this Saturday against Auburn. Here is Nick Saban yesterday.
I have confidence in our coaches and our players that, you know, they'll be able to do what they have to do. I mean, we all got to live with the consequences of what happens, whether I'm standing there or not. So that's something I hope everybody realizes.
All right, so that's Nick Saban. Here are Paul Feinbaum and Heather Dinich. Happy Thanksgiving, guys. And Heather, let me start with you. What more can you tell us about where Alabama goes from here for this game without Saban?
Well, Greeny, they go to offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian. He's going to handle most of the day-to-day head coaching responsibilities in the football building. He'll call the plays on Saturday against Auburn. Nick Saban will be at home as he has been isolating for at least 10 days per CDC guidelines. He'll be participating in team meetings and everything through Zoom, as he did the last time he had a positive test, although last time it was a false positive. This time is for real, so he's had a bit of practice with this, but he's got confidence in Sarkisian, who has been a head coach before.
Now, Paul, we look on the screen there, we see the number. I mean, Alabama's a 3-touchdown favorite and then some, but crazy things happen in rivalry games, and that's what this is, a rivalry game. How do you think his absence impacts this game?
Greeny, I don't think it's going to have a big impact. And yes, this is a rivalry game. This is the Iron Bowl. And remember, Gus Malzahn, the Auburn coach, has won 2 out of the last 3 against Nick Saban. Find someone else who can make that statement outside of Clemson, South Carolina. But beyond that, they have confidence in Sarkisian. As Heather said, he's been a head coach at Washington, at Southern Cal. They've already been through this drill before. And I think that's the one thing that's helping them. And also, the last time it was against Georgia, and at that point, before we knew Saban was coming back, Alabama had not played that well. Their defense was shaky. The defense has really turned it up many, many steps right now. So there's a much higher degree of confidence going into this game at home.
I think the overwhelming expectation is that Alabama wins the game, and perhaps comfortably. But Heather, in this scenario where Auburn pulls off what would be an enormous upset without Nick Saban on the sideline, what would be our best indication of how the people who make these college football playoff decisions view that, the absence of the coach?
Well, I think it's the same thing as the absence of Trevor Lawrence when Clemson lost to Notre Dame in double overtime. And you see what the selection committee did with them with one loss just this Tuesday night, putting them ahead of undefeated Ohio State. I think the path would be similar, and so would the deliberations in that committee meeting room. They know what the team is missing without Nick Saban, just like they do Clemson without Trevor Lawrence. So I don't think it would hurt them in the big picture. Alabama would still have a chance to win the SEC, and I think that they would be right on track, even with a loss, same as Clemson.
Well, there's no better way to gauge these kinds of things than by the callers on the Paul Feinbaum Show. What have you been hearing from the folks down there, Paul?
Greeny, they were remarkably calm yesterday when the news broke, and you juxtapose that with 5 or 6 weeks ago when it was literally panic. Remember that first Saban positive test, which turned out to be negative three tests later, really shocked the Alabama fan base. Yesterday, maybe their minds were on Thanksgiving, I don't know, but they were unbelievably calm for a fan base in the South.
All right, guys, it's so good to see you. Thank you for everything you do for this show all the time. Heather, we spoil first your vacation over the summer, now we spoil your Thanksgiving, but thank you both, and we will see you again tomorrow. Meanwhile, let's run the floor. We got college basketball season opening there, and let's get to know some of the big young stars here. And it starts with Cade Cunningham, who scored 21 points, 10 boards in his debut as Oklahoma State beat UT Arlington. He is the #1 overall projected pick in next year's mock draft, so be ready to start seeing a lot of him. Kentucky and its next freshman class cruised past Morehead State 81-45. Brandon Boston Jr., who's ranked #7 in ESPN's top 100, had 15 points and 7 boards. Terrence Clark added 12 for the Wildcats. And here's another top prospect who may be playing in the NBA next season. USC 7-foot freshman Evan Mobley had 21 points, 9 rebounds in his debut, which was an overtime win. He is currently the number 4 projected pick in next year's mock draft. All right, we're just getting started on this Thanksgiving. Coming up, Doug Peterson doesn't exactly sound convinced about who his quarterback should be on Monday night. Wait until you hear how he talked about this. And then they're not exactly firing on all cylinders in Tampa. Can Brady and the Bucs right the ship? You've got questions, we've got answers as we get up with you on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and we've asked all of our squad to name their favorite Thanksgiving moments today. Dominique, what's yours?
Man, it was Thanksgiving when Randy Gene Moss had 3 receptions for 163 yards and 3 touchdowns. I believe that was the day when his name became a verb. This was outstanding. He was a rookie, and he just kind of took over the league in that moment. It was bananas.
One of the great performances of all time and impossible to forget. That's right, that entire season, but that day, because it is so high profile, the entire country took note. Well done. Meanwhile, coming up, it wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement of his struggling quarterback. Why did Doug Peterson hesitate when asked a simple question? You will hear it. And then there's nothing simple about this question. This one's for Dominique. Who is the leader among active players in 50-yard touchdown catches? The answer is next.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back with a Thanksgiving edition of Sneaky Hembo for Dominique. Nick, who is the leader among active players in 50-yard touchdown catches? I will tell you, the leader has twice as many as the player who is second.
I want to say Tyreek Hill, but his career is too short. I think we might be talking about the Eagles coming up here, so I'm going DeSean Jackson.
Oh, he knows Hembo so well. That's exactly right. He did it. He knows what's coming up in the rundown. And so he knows Hembo usually plays that way. DeSean Jackson with 26. A.J. Green is next on the list with 13. That's a great moment from Dominique, who is thankful, no question, for having gotten that one right. And, of course, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, as I bring the crew into the conversation here, let's think about some of the players in the National Football League and the people who are giving thanks today. Bart, let's start with you. Who's giving thanks on this day?
Well, Greeny, I'm going to go with Alex Smith because the athlete dies two deaths, and Alex Smith has had an opportunity to come back and walk away from this game. Everybody else on this set was carried off and got walking papers. He has an opportunity to come back from a horrific injury where he almost lost his leg. He should be given thanks because he gets to ride off into the sunset on his own terms.
Absolutely. We'll get to see him play today. That's well done. D-Wood, how about you? Who's giving thanks today?
Yeah, I'm going to go with DeAndre Hopkins, and we all see that mess that's going down there with in Houston. And DeAndre Hopkins is playing at an elite level out there in the desert with Kyler Murray. I mean, they have 912 yards as a quarterback receiver tandem, most in the National Football League. And most importantly, Greeny, he's playing for a contender with the Arizona Cardinals. We see how well they're playing as a ball club. So I'm sure he's really thankful to be out there in the desert.
I'm with you. All right, I like that one. Dominique, how about you?
I'd say the rest of the NFC, especially the defenses, because the Packers decided to go with that Manny Fresh style drafting and go hood rich and go for a quarterback when they could have used another receiver. I know how scary Aaron Rodgers is with his receiving core that he has now, but if you could imagine all those great receivers that were in the draft last year, you could have added one of those guys to the Packers situation. I think that the issues that they have on their defense would be much less of a concern because Aaron Rodgers might be putting up 40 a game.
That's a very good one. I'm thankful to you for doing that one because I've been saying it all year long. All right, I'll tell you someone else who should be thankful, and that is Bruce Arians. He should be thankful for having Tom Brady as his quarterback. I want to play for you again Arians' blunt comments from Tuesday about Brady's accuracy. Listen to this.
We've had the guys open. We just missed them. And there are times when coverage dictates you go to that guy. I think we can do a better job utilizing the deep ball in our game plan more of or less of. So each and every week so different. But when they're there, we need to hit them. We can't have them going off our fingertips, and we can't overthrow them. Other than the deep ball, I think he's getting confused a few times with coverage. That might be causing some inaccurate balls, but I don't see it at all in practice. We're not missing the deep ball in practice, that's for sure. So it's just a matter on Sundays hitting them.
Those comments continue to just stun me, confused by the coverage and inaccurate and all of this stuff. So, Shefty, let me start with you. Is there reason to believe that Brady and Arians genuinely are not on the same page? There was really some problem there.
I just think Bruce is very blunt, and we're not used to hearing that kind of candor when it comes to the greatest quarterback of all time. It's just strange to hear him basically calling him out like he's a young quarterback who is growing up in this league. It just seems odd. Some of those phrases, some of those expressions. I think Tom Brady knows what he has to do. I don't know that there's a real need. We like head coaches to be honest, right? But is there a need for him to point that out publicly that Tom is missing, he's inaccurate, he's missing? I don't know. It just seems a little odd to me that that's going on right now.
Me too. It also seems odd to me that Bruce Arians is running an offense that looks nothing like what Tom Brady has done so successfully for 20 years in the NFL. Bart Scott, let me come to you on that. What are your thoughts? You know a little bit about the history of Arians that I think is very interesting here.
Right, Rob. Saying if we want to start pointing things out, let's start pointing some things out about Bruce Arians. Why did Bruce Arians get ran out of Pittsburgh? Because he kept making Ben Roethlisberger a sitting target, a sitting duck. He was, Ben Roethlisberger was sacked 215 times in 5 years because of Bruce Arians' inability or willingness to run the football. Tom Brady has come from an offense where he traditionally runs the football. So this is Bruce Arians' ego versus Tom Brady's meekness, right? Tom Brady thrives with two tight ends on the field. He has 14 touchdowns this year with two tight ends on the field. That is overwhelmingly the highest number in the NFL. He thrives off the running game. Bruce Arians is so busy trying to throw the ball deep down the field, he doesn't recognize that he has a quarterback that will slice you up, death by a thousand paper cuts. You know, we talked about, you know, last year, we talked about Jameis Winston and his, you know, interceptions. That's because you're taking these seven-step drops. You don't have a great offensive line. You have immobile quarterback back there taking shots for no reason because you want to have seven-step drops when you have the ability to have two dynamic running backs, two great tight ends, but you're trying to do the shiny new toy and throw the ball down the field. That's not what Tom Brady does.
I'm so totally in line with that, Bart. I completely agree. D. Wood, what are your thoughts as you hear all of this?
Well, listen, first of all, can we be surprised that B.A. is saying anything? This is his DNA. He's always been outgoing. He's not going, you know, hold his tongue type of coach. He's always been like that. I understand it's Tom Brady, but that's what Tom Brady signed up for. Second, I don't know if B.A. lied. He didn't lie when he was saying anything. Tom Brady has 33 incompletions to open receivers. That's third most in the National Football League. And yes, I do agree with Bart that I think Bruce Arians needs to cater his offense more to Tom Brady. And it just leads me to believe, is Tom Brady in on these meetings where they're designing the game plan? I mean, because that was the way it was in New England. Like, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick would have meetings all throughout the week to make sure the game plans were catered to, you know, to meet, to do the things that he was very good at. So I just, this whole thing is real peculiar. And they need to get this thing straightened out. The Bucs going to be in trouble.
I agree. Shefty, quick final word. Looked like you had something else.
Well, it just seems like, listen, we are used to hearing players point the finger at themselves. We're used to coaches pointing the finger at themselves. And you never hear Bruce Arians say, that's my bad. That's on me. It's Brady's fault, somebody else's fault. And it just seems unusual because anytime any other head coach points out another player, it becomes a headline. And when it involves Bruce Arians and the greatest player here, then it becomes an even bigger headline.
Absolutely. That's well said. So that's one quarterback situation we deal with. Let's get to another. And this is the one in Philadelphia, which is also very unusual. Now, the Eagles, of course, sit atop the NFC East standings, but that has not stopped a lot of people from calling for the benching of Carson Wentz. Yesterday, Doug Peterson talking about his struggling quarterback. Just watch and listen to this.
Tough decisions have to be made in this business, whether it's a tough decision to move on from a player in the offseason or the decision now to whether you're going to make the move at quarterback or not.
You're not making that move, right, Doug, to a different quarterback?
Not today on Wednesday, no.
Okay, possibly for Monday?
I'm focused right now on getting better today. I mean, okay. We're looking – I don't know. I mean, I would say no.
Carson's your starter for Monday?
Yes.
Huh. Dominique, what?
I mean, does he think that he's being deposed under oath? Was he subpoenaed by Tim McManus? Like, you don't have to tell the truth. I don't think that all leaders don't understand, I think, the purpose of the media. You have to understand that the purpose is not to be honest necessarily. That's not your goal. Your goal is not to fully inform the media of everything that's going on in your mind. Your goal is to do what's best for your team. And if you don't think that, I can't understand why he would think that being so unsure and uncertain and confused and hemming and hawing, like as if he answered this incorrectly, that they were going to fire him on them. I don't understand how he thinks that helps his team. And if he doesn't understand that the point of the media, for him at least, is not to give the right answer, but to give the best answer. And that answer just seemed like he was surprised by a question that he's been getting for at least 5 weeks now. He was shocked that they hit him with it. It doesn't make sense to me. It blows my mind that he would do that going into this game. What you do in that situation is say, this is my guy, I'm standing by my guy. Then if he stinks it up again, then the next week, if you want to change, then you change. I just don't get the point of being so confused in front of a question that he can't be surprised by.
Shefty, I was trying to read your face. What'd you think of it?
Well, again, that sounded like a head coach who's thinking about making a quarterback change. That's what it sounded like. Pauses, going back and forth, opening the door. I'm just telling you, in any media market, that right there is evidence that you are contemplating a quarterback change. That's what it sounded like.
I totally agree. In the meantime, Bart Scott, I know that you don't think that's what they should do. Why not?
Listen, my wife and our therapist would tell us that that's being passive aggressive. And that's what he's doing, right? Fine point. Listen, in the last 2 seconds, we just talked about two coaches that point the finger, not the thumb. And that's not what you expect from management. Like, at the end of the day, Doug Peterson won with somebody else's player, a Super Bowl in his second. He won in his second season. He has weapons out there that are aging. Listen, we're about to go to Christmas this season, and a lot of people are going to go out there, and they're going to buy a lot of things. But guess what? That credit card bill is going to be due. And that's what's due for the Philadelphia Eagles. $64 million over the cap. You talk about Jason Peters. You talk about Kelce. You talk about Lane Johnson. That's a great offensive line 3 years ago. So now, you know, you think about Carson Wentz. He's around. He has to be around during the transition, much like Russell Wilson had to stay around when the Legion of Boom left and they had to retool. This is Howie Roseman and his ability to spend all this money and buy all these shiny pieces and not draft well, and Carson Wentz is paying the price. He's on pace to get sacked 60 times. What quarterback can thrive in this league when he's getting on pace to be getting sacked 60 times in one season?
Sacks are his fault because he holds onto the ball for quite some time.
Yeah, and
you brought up
I'm faster than Alshon Jeffries right now. He can't jump over a paperclip.
you brought up the relationship idea in this, and I think that's a good analogy because we all know if you're in relationships that being honest is not always the right thing to do. You know, when you get those certain questions, that you know how to answer those questions. Doug Peterson apparently doesn't realize that sometimes you just got to be a little dishonest. In that situation, I love my quarterback. My quarterback looks great in his pants. My quarterback is fantastic at throwing. I'm going to stand by him. And then when he's terrible, then you say, I don't know. Let me go ahead and look at this younger, maybe better quarterback.
I get to leave it there for the moment. With Bart, I don't know what's going on there, but it's amusing to watch. We've lost the audio on it, but I like it either way. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we have much more to do. And I'll remind you, we got great college football coming your way tomorrow. You want to watch all of this because all these games have significant implications. Texas, Iowa State's noon Eastern on ABC. Then you got a monster game. Notre Dame and North Carolina is a very big game in the afternoon on ABC. And then ESPN prime time, you got Oregon, Oregon State. All three games have significant implications. All can also be watched on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, as we continue, hints that a big change is on the way in Chicago, but is it the right change? We'll talk about that. And then here's something I never thought I would ask. It's not December, and are the Patriots already done? Is Damian Woody willing to stick a fork in his former team? You'll find out next. It's Get Up on ESPN. We continue on Get Up and sticking sort of with the Thanksgiving theme. It's time for us to ask if it's time to stick a fork in certain NFL teams. Bart, you have the Vikings. Are you sticking a fork in Minnesota?
Yeah, they're done, Greeny. I think last week was the nail in the coffin for them. You know, they have New Orleans and they still have Tampa Bay left. You know, 8 losses in this division won't get it done when you think about what's going on in the NFC West with Arizona, Seattle, and the Rams. I think it's a fork. They're done, Greeny.
Me too. And I like the little fork graphic that we have there. D. Wood, how about you? Your old team, the Patriots, took a fork in them?
Not yet, Greeny, but they're hanging on by a thread, man. Listen, I know that was a heartbreaking loss against the Houston Texans last week, but they got a shot at home against the Arizona Cardinals against a quarterback in Kyler Murray, who has an ailing shoulder right now. I think the Patriots can bounce back in this game.
Okay, so not really to give up on the Pats. How about you, Neek? Are you sticking a fork in the Chicago Bears?
Oh, absolutely. The Bears are forked. They've been forked since they moved up to draft Mitchell Trubisky, and then they got double forked when they went and thought that Nick Foles was the answer. Like, it's a forking bad issue they got there in Chicago, and I don't think that there's a solution, despite the fact that that defense is phenomenal.
I tell you what, that was excellent elocution, because those are some dangerous thoughts to share, but well done. Let's talk about their quarterbacks. Look, Nick Foles has gone 2-5 this season with a QBR of just 44. Mitchell Trubisky, again, 3-0 when he got benched. If Foles starts this weekend, the Bears likely will be using their 20th different starting quarterback against the Packers since 1992. Yesterday, the head coach, Matt Nagy, declined to name a starter for this weekend, but he did say this about Trubisky.
My belief is that Mitchell has used these weeks to make himself a better overall NFL quarterback. And I don't know whenever and if ever he gets that chance, when he does, but I do believe in my heart of hearts that he has grown from this situation. I believe that he will be a better player because of it. If he is going, what I would say is this, is I have all the confidence in the world in him.
So that was a lot of words. Dominique, your thoughts?
I mean, it's another head coach who feels like he is under subpoena and has to be honest all the time. Like, that was awful. And I hope Mitchell Trubisky didn't hear that quote, because it just made him worse. Like, I don't understand the point of that. I'll say it again. Before you sit down to do an interview, all head coaches, all CEOs, all leaders of any kind, everyone is going to listen to your words very carefully, and they mean quite a bit. Before you sit down and you're going to say something, ask yourself, what am I accomplishing by saying this? The goal is not to answer the question. The goal is to forward the agenda that you want to forward. He has accomplished nothing but make us look at this situation and be quite confused. What are you accomplishing by doing that, other than making Mitchell Trubisky a worse quarterback than he was before you said it?
D-Wood, who should he go with? If both guys are able to play based on injury, who should their quarterback be?
Granted, I mean, you put me in a damn hard position here, but I'm going to go with Mitchell Trubisky. And listen, and the sole reason, honestly, is because we know the one thing that's been wrong with the Bears offense is the offensive line. The offensive line has been ravaged with injuries, and they're terrible. But the one thing that Mitchell Trubisky can do well is he can move around and maneuver around the pocket, outside the pocket. So he does bring a different element to that offense that Nick Foles just can't bring.
Correct. It is an element to the offense the head coach has never shown any interest in wanting to utilize, but it is something that he did well enough to make him a Pro Bowl quarterback and to take his team to the playoffs just a couple of years ago. Meanwhile, Bart Scott, you had a different idea of someone they should be thinking about at quarterback.
Well, in the future, but right now, you know, to say that, you know, Mitchell Trubisky has used his time to get better is not a ringing endorsement. That's just saying he went from horrible to bad. You know, that doesn't mean that he's still a starting quality quarterback in this league. But I think next year they should really consider, you know, trying to trade for Sam Darnold, getting a young quarterback that they can try and fit into their system. We know that if the Jets get the number one overall pick, they may be moving on, and Sam may have value. We'll see what Sam is capable of these last six games with his weapons now. But I think they're going to have to turn the page, and you don't want to have to pick up anybody's option. Sam Darnold is a young quarterback that you feel can still have a bright future in this league. It just may not be with his current team.
Now, I'm with you on that, and you know that I'm a big believer in Darnold. But, Dominique, very seldom does a coach get brought in to develop a specific player, fail to develop that player, and then get to coach the next one. You know what I mean? Like, that feels to me like it's going to be the big question there in Chicago.
It feels like that you often get kind of paired with your quarterback. We're talking about it in Philly. It's always the situation. That's why it's such a big decision when you draft a quarterback. We saw Arizona was the quickest situation where a quarterback and coach were run out of there when Rosen didn't pan out. So it happens quite quickly. I'm not sure that Matt Nagy is going to be able to stick around. If they move on from those quarterbacks, they might also move on from that coach, especially since it seems like he can't get the best out of the guys that they have there.
Yep, it's going to be, again, he comes in there as an offensive guru when they've drafted the young quarterback, and his job is to develop him. And all he seems to want to do is get him off the field. Really quick, Bart, why are you shaking your head?
Well, I don't think that, you know, Nagy's going to hang around. I think you have to make that move and that decision. But, you know, because they're so cash-strapped, you're not going to get a quarterback that may change your franchise around that year. So you have to go maybe for a veteran. There's going to be a lot of veteran quarterbacks out there, whether it's Jameis, whether it's Sam Darnold. And you're going to have to try and get one of these retreads, maybe even Mariota. But I think that's the same player as Mitchell Trubisky.
If they get Sam Darnold, I'm telling you, that could wind up being something that we remember for a long time. Meanwhile, we are asking all of our analysts today to remember their favorite NFL Thanksgiving moments. Damian Woody, you're next. What's your favorite Thanksgiving memory?
Well, Greeny, I had to go with my Patriot years back in 2002. We played the Lions on Thanksgiving Day. And I just remember Coach Belichick was like, guys, you win, you take care of business. You got the weekend off, and I'm just looking like, what the hell's going on with Bill? That never happened. So we went out there and took care of our business. Best believe that.
Wow, that's a good memory. It makes me feel a little sad that of all the different things, that the notion he might give you a few days off for a win is the thing you remember. But I'm being told as we speak that we have very significant breaking news, and for that, let me bring Adam Schefter back into the conversation. Schefty, go.
Well, as Jameson Hensley, the Ravens reporter at ESPN.com, is reporting this morning, there are more positive tests in Baltimore. This marks the fourth straight day that the Ravens have had positive tests. And it goes to show that it would have been very difficult to play this game tonight. And it goes to show that it may be difficult to play that game on Sunday. Obviously, the Ravens are pointing a finger at their strength coach, strength and conditioning coach already, in a statement they released last night. But the spread continues in Baltimore at this time. It continues to grow. And if it is not contained, then clearly the game on Sunday is going to be not played, and there are all sorts of issues that stem from that because we're past buys here, Greeny, and we're at the point in the season where maybe you're looking at a cancellation, and again, we're going to get ahead of ourselves here. I know you brought up the idea of forfeit. I don't know that a forfeit is going to happen, but how about the Pittsburgh Steelers? How do you think the 72 Miami Dolphins would feel about them having one less game on their record in the regular season? But again, those are issues for another day. The bottom line right now is more positive tests in Baltimore for the fourth straight day as the Ravens struggle to contain this outbreak.
All right, hold that thought right there. I'm going to go to break on that, but off the top of the hour, there is a lot to dive into, as Shefty just suggested, including what the possibilities become if they cannot play Sunday, and they're supposed to play next Thursday. We'll take a very short break. We're back with all of that in a moment. This is Get Up on ESPN.